And I'm Jamie. Welcome to Driver Picks the Podcast.
Where I pick the podcast.
And I shut my cake hole.
And today we are discussing the 13th episode of season 6 titled Unforgiven. Jamie, what did you think?
Okay, so this is so much worse than I thought it was going to
be. Yeah, literally.
Last week I was like, I was pitching, I was like, oh, we're finally going to get some like Bobby Sam trauma healing moment. Like,
we got zero of, by the way.
No. It's about how Sam killed this random dude because he was turning into a fucking monster.
I think maybe this week we start with a blanket big yikes and we get that out of the way before moving into some of the other stuff.
Some of the more specific big yikes.
Yeah, so blanket big yikes this episode. And if you haven't seen it in a while, here's the reasoning. They basically kill off a whole bunch of women who slept with Sam. Mm-hmm. So all we know about them is that they slept with Sam and now they're dead. And other than that, they kill off the only person of colour in the episode, only to bring him back as the villain of the week and kill him off again.
Big yikes!
So that's that on that. Here's the thing. I don't think there's really much more to say about it. Like, I don't think that we have to go into why those are bad things.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
I think what we can move on to, though, is the fact that this is literally Sam's death dick the episode.
It is! It really is. Like, I fully forgot what episode we were up to today. Like, I thought that we were watching an episode that's actually, like, 2 or 3 episodes from now. And so I went into this having one thought and then was, like, immediately like, oh, right, this episode. But no, you're right. It's Sam's death dick of the episode.
Yeah.
I would like to point out the ongoing theme of Sam being actually into brunettes as well.
Yeah.
Which is just a thing. Literally, the only non-brunette he's ever been interested in is Jess.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else you wanted to... Oh, actually, I have a quick note that I want to pop out.
Go for it.
While we're talking in the realm of big yikes, it is actually an episode written by Darbin Loughlin.
Yeah.
Directed by David Barnett, who I apologize if we've seen an episode of his before and I've just forgotten, but I don't recognize the name as like a regular director. Granted, I haven't double checked that, but personally, like, the name doesn't jump out to me. It's like, oh, okay, recognizable. And on the note that it's Darbin Loughlin, Dean is like up and downing waitresses and making comments about the missing women and stuff and being just generally kind of weird about women. And so I want to do a quick little note to the Darb effect of Dean being a womanizer, ladies man, horny douchebag. So I just a quick little touch on that. I don't think we have to spend, you know, time.
It's almost like he's like, no, Dean can't be queer, so we've got to make him aggressively heterosexual.
Literally. It's ridiculous. Also, on the director, the fucking close-ups this episode. My God.
They made choices.
They made...
It's almost like they lost their, like, wide lens, so they were genuinely. Like...
It got misplaced or it got broken and they were like, eh, we don't have the budget to buy a new one.
So just gotta make do with what we've got. I guess everything's a close-up now.
Literally, I have a note that says, the fucking close-ups, damn, you want us to be able to count their fucking paws? Because, like, they're so close all the time. Half the episode, I swear to God, is shot closer than chest up. Like, it's crazy. Especially the flashbacks.
Yeah.
And I get it.
The fucking flashbacks, though, kills me every goddamn time. I was almost, like, gaslighting myself a little bit. Like, we saw the first one. I'm like, okay, it's just to, like, establish it as a bit. And then we saw the second one. I'm like, okay, maybe I'm, like, maybe it's not as bad as I think it is. And then the third time, I'm like, no, it's probably as bad as I think it is. Then I'm like, no, surely it can't be that bad. And then they hit me with another one. And I'm like, oh.
By the time you get into the, like, minutes long one, you're like, okay.
Okay, yeah, no, like, this was always bad. I'm not just being weird about this. This is actually fucking bad.
Here's the thing. We had a joke a little while ago about, like, season 2 Corden that wants its port back.
Yeah.
Literally in this episode, there are being sent text messages with random fucking coordinates to go to a town to hunt a case. And then Sam's having fucking visions. I'm like, I'm sorry. Sorry. Season 1 called and it wants its fucking plot.
It also wants its fucking lighting choices.
Yeah, literally.
Because this episode, there are full daytime scenes and you can see literally nothing. And I'm like, why can we not currently see anything?
Yeah.
It makes no sense for it to be this dark.
Yeah, it's such a dark episode. I think actually that's been like a trend through season 6 that we've like repeatedly noticed is it is a lot darker and grungier. And I think that, like, we've talked about this a couple of times, there's no real reason to harp on about it, but the grunge aesthetic of season 1 really made quite a strong comeback in season 6. And, like, as we've been talking about, like, obviously that wasn't hitting with the audience retention and stuff.
Yeah.
And so they're obviously sort of swerving out of that.
Yeah.
And season 7, it's like completely shifted. Yeah.
It's almost like the Sarah Gamble long con is like, oh, I want to do what Kripke was doing in seasons 1 to 3, but I want angels in it.
Yeah, like I want to do what Kripke did, but better.
Yeah.
It was kind of, sounds like it was the plan, and then it just didn't quite
pan out for her.
Yeah,
like,
no.
I love the vision, babe, but it's bad.
We love the vision. The execution is lacking.
Yeah.
I genuinely think a lot of it comes down to just the Campbells are just kind of like meh as characters. And like we've talked about this before as well. They're just not that interesting, if I'm being totally honest. And like this episode I don't think does anything to help that. Like Samuel's in it for like a significant portion and I'm like, I feel like we learn nothing about his character.
But he's not in, he's in flashbacks.
Yeah, but
which
like
again as they made the flashbacks like 80% of this episode. Mm-hmm. They did not need to be 80% of this episode.
Well that's my point. Like Samuel is literally in so much of this episode, sort of, like in the flashbacks, but we learn nothing about him except that he's like willing to just stand there and kind of watch as Sam makes horrific choices and fuck shit up. Like,
yeah.
There are so many points. Like, he's beating the shit out of the highway patrolman.
Shit up.
With his dick of death, yes.
Yeah.
It's literally so funny.
We've all seen this.
Yeah, death dick. We all know about it. Genuinely, the way that Sam is beating the absolute shit out of this highway patrolman for no good reason. And Samuel just stands there and watches him like, well, okay. And then he has that line like, do you think there was maybe a calmer way we could have like done that? And it's like, yeah, probably. If you'd interjected ever at all and like stopped Sam, psycho, from beating the shit out of this man. Actually, one thing I want to point out about Sam this episode, I do think it's really interesting, is that I don't think he has ever appeared so psychotic. But also so much like a poor little meow meow simultaneously.
Because current Sam is trying to be poor little meow meow.
I don't think he's trying. I think he just is poor little meow meow. Like, he doesn't have any memory. All he knows is he feels guilty. Like, that's it.
I feel like it kind of misses the mark a little bit. Mm. And, like, I want to say, like, I think they're certainly framing him as a sympathetic character in this episode. And I think that's...
I think they've been given no choice because...
He literally previously committed atrocities. They're trying to blame it on the fact he had no soul, despite the fact it was still actually fucking him.
Which is a point that he makes, like, in the episode.
I think it falls just short of poor little Meow Meow because he was not the one who made those decisions. Mm. Whereas poor little Meow Meow is a very specific phenomenon where baby girl makes bad decisions of their own free will and volition. And then we still poor little Meow Meow them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like you could almost treat Soulless Sam as a separate character to Sam.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that's like an ongoing discussion as well.
It's more like his twin did some atrocity.
For me, it's sort of like, you know when people are like, I only did it because I was drunk? It's kind of that removal of your inhibitions.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I view it. So I'm like, okay, but like, you, it was still you.
Yeah.
Like, you still have to, like, you may have been intoxicated, but you still have to own the actions that you performed while intoxicated.
Mm.
And so I think that that kind of, for me, is how I view Soulless Sam, but it's not the same
for everyone. I think the difference, the reason why I wouldn't view Soulless Sam through that lens is if you're going out and drinking alcohol and getting fucked up, you're choosing to do that.
Okay, that's a good point.
Sam did not choose to lose his soul.
He just kind of ended up in that situation.
That was Crowley making yas bitch decisions.
That was Crowley moving the plot.
Yeah, literally. Somebody's got to do it. For me, yeah, I think the difference is it's more like he's been, like, roofied or something, you know what I mean? Like,
I do want to make a point, though, is, like, and this occurred to me while he was, like, in the prison cell and he's talking to Brenna when she first comes to confront him. As an audience member who fully knows that Sam is telling the truth when he's telling Brenna that he has no idea, like, what's going on, like, he doesn't remember anything, I still find it hard to believe him because I am so used to him being a manipulative asshole without his soul for, like, the last half a season. So I'm, like, looking at Sam and I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, you seem sus. Like, this is the same puppy dog routine you've been pulling on Dean for the last fucking 12 episodes. But I know that that whole time you were lying to him. And, like, honestly, like, I know now. Like, I have just think full context, but I still don't trust him.
I also just think it's inherently less interesting when he's not doing it as an act.
Yeah. Well, Sam got his morals back.
Yeah.
And he feels bad for the things that he did.
And that's great, though. Like, sucks to be him, but, like...
Sam is at his most fun and interesting when he's being psychotic.
Exactly! Like, they just fully removed his psychosis for, like, a bit, and it's like, I miss it. It's time to be unhinged again, boo.
The way they leave the episode off, does that give you hope? A return to Sam's psychosis?
I mean,
the way you scream laughed when it came on screen gives me.
Okay, let's jump to the end. You're provoking this.
Yeah.
That scene is bad.
And that's your opinion.
If you don't agree with me, maybe watch it again. And take note of everything about the scene. And ask yourself, why?
2011 was a different time.
The special effects look fucking weird. The fact that it's basically a rehash of the end of season 3, but worse.
I agree with you. I don't think the special effects hold up. But, like, also, I'm willing to give it a pass on that. I'm more likely to let things pass on that than you are. That's just, like, how we consume it. But I'm willing to give it a pass. The thing that gets me and has always gotten me is, why is his face on fire? Because that's not flammable. Like, not in the same way. Like, his hair, totally. Yeah. His clothes, absolutely. But why is his, like, cheek just on fire? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Because it's not his body. It's his soul,
oh,
Bethany.
Right. Jesus. I'm so sorry.
Everyone knows souls are flammable.
Everyone knows. That's why Crowley wants them. You burn them like coal.
Yeah, exactly. Except for, you know, it's actually better for Felicia.
Sorry, I just thought, you know that fucking photo of Scott Morrison standing in Parliament with his fucking handful of coal like a moron? I just imagined, like, Crowley, but, like, it's a soul, and he's doing the same thing.
Except for it's better, because everyone knows souls are better for pollution than fucking coal.
Oh my god, like, green energy, yes.
They burn clean.
No, okay. So, that has always confused me, because I'm like, why is his skin on fire? Like, I just, like, melting, sure, but, like, literally a flame? Like, okay. What is interesting, though, is the difference between where we see Dean in that shot where he, and, like, arguably it's not his body, but it is his soul in hell, right? Versus where we see Sam's soul in hell. And obviously Dean wasn't in the cage.
Yeah.
Right, so it's, like, different zones, if you will. But I do think it's interesting that this is the two glimpses we've got, and they are entirely
the shift different of imagery of hell.
Yeah, like, Dean is in this, like, fucking vast empty void, and Sam is, like, in a literal pit of flames. He's literally like that meme of Elmo.
Yeah. Like,
you know the one.
No, I'm just imagining, you know, the fucking community meme where, like,
the room walks in with the pizza box.
That's Dean.
Yeah. Or Crowley.
But, like, I think, like, you could also, you know, from that you can infer that, like, partially what makes it hell is that hell is designed for the individual person. Like, hell is not just, like, flames. It's not just one thing or the other.
Actually, and so we all get a really interesting insight into what hell is in the supernatural
and
universe,
I think,
by the end of this season.
I want to just pop this here. I think hell is not just one thing. Like,
yeah,
it's not just like a pit of flames. It's not just like a vast empty space. There are sections in hell. There's all different flavors. There's all different types of tortures for all different types of people.
Yeah.
It's inclusive.
It's part of Crowley's new and improved management strategy. Genuinely, we will get to talk about this at a later date. I'm very excited to come back to this. One thing I did really want to point out, because I think from, like, a meta, well, not so much a meta, but, like, a character development and literature, like, narrative point, I think is really interesting, is that we know that for Dean, like, the most important driving force in his life, the thing that, you know, he is really scared of is being abandoned, is being alone, all his loved ones leaving him, and literally when we see him in hell, he's strung up, he's completely alone in a formless void, and he's screaming for Sam. That is his hell.
Yeah.
He is alone. His brother isn't there. His family is gone. He's just fucking. He has no opportunity to
He's alone and
expand.
He's helpless.
Exactly.
His worst nightmare.
He's literally strung up. Sam is burning. And Sam's, like, the atrocities that have followed Sam are always, like, rooted in fire, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have Mary and, like, the blood and then her burning on the ceiling. Later on, we have Jess and, like, obviously, as Chuck says, the literary symmetry of that. And then the whole thing with, like, Lucifer and him being, like, that whole fucking random shit they pulled about, like, oh, Sam, you know how you're always running hot or whatever? And we were like, wow, okay, Sam's sweaty, cool. You know, like, that's a fun bit of lore. But, like, yeah, like, a lot of Sam's really traumatic, pivotal moments for his character are rooted in fire, right?
Yeah.
And so I do think it is fascinating that those are the ways they've chosen to depict hell. And you could just say, well, like, Dean was in hell for the sole objective of being tortured till he broke, and Sam is in hell essentially to be Lucifer and Michael's plaything, you know. So it's, like, different narrative.
But they're both in hell to be tortured.
Yeah. And
just for different purposes and different, like, in different situations. But at the end of the day, it is still meant to be torturous for both of them. It is certainly interesting that they've sort of hand-selected these two specific types of torture.
Yeah. And there's part of me that wonders, like, if this falls under the sort of category of supernatural, which is, like, accidentally good. And, like, I wonder if this actually went
in an episode
that
is just purposefully bad.
Well, theoretically, yeah, because I can't imagine they made many of these choices thinking, yeah, that's a good idea.
It's the sort of thing where, like, yeah, I, you know, obviously I don't think they were sitting there going, oh, this is a bad idea, let's do it.
I think it's the kind of decision they made without thinking about it, and again, looking at it through the lens of from 2011. Like, I think that genuinely it's a reflection of, like, societal culture at the time, and, like, just they did not think about it as much as they should have.
Like, I think when they made this, they thought it was lit. The plot line is just 10 out of 10. The sound design is appropriate for the episode.
Sound design? Is atrocious. Literally, if you haven't watched this episode in a while, probably that's good.
Like, you're probably doing better than us. But if you do want to have, like, a good little chuckle, just watch this episode for the sound design.
Watch it with your eyes closed, honestly. Like, just listen.
Just listen to the gongs.
The gonging. I have a note. And I was like, this music literally sounds like me as, like, a six-year-old child being left unattended in the music room at primary school and just, like, dinging randomly on xylophones, pressing random keys on a piano, and, like, running my hands through, like, the wind chimes, you know? Like, that's what it sounds like. The gonging is ridiculous. And I think sometimes the clunky sort of music design is, like, intentional. Like, it's, like, a tension-building thing or, like, a device to make you feel kind of, like, off-kilter or whatever. This episode, it was just distracting. And I don't know if it's, like, just me who found that. But, like, I certainly was like, this is just, it's not hidden. And they kept bringing it back the whole episode. It was repetitive.
It was like they had lost all of their instruments. They were like, here we go.
Yeah. Not only did they break and or lose the camera lens that allowed them to have wider than immediate close-up shots, but also they blew out all the speakers and lost all their audio files, and they just had to deal with whatever they had lying around in the workshop.
Did their budget just get, like, suddenly cut for this episode or something?
I fuck knows.
Because they didn't even have any of the good recurring actors in it.
I was just going to say, I wonder if maybe they were trying to save budget so that they could have more Mark Sherman and more Misha. I know that we have obviously, like, the staring at Long Con of, like, she doesn't like Cass or whatever. But, like, you have to admit, like, in this first half of this season, Misha's not been around so much, which holds up. But Mark Sherman actually was in a fair bit. And so...
Sarah Gamble, Mark Sherman besties?
Yeah. So I think that... You know, like, maybe they are trying to save budget. Although they did have the guest actor whose name I forget for Samuel Campbell. So, Mitch. Yes, that's the one. Oh, the Days of Our Lives reference destroyed me. It was so funny. They were talking.
Babe from Brother. Like,
they're talking such shit about Days of Our Lives. And I was like, really? You want to make fun of what lazy writing in a different television show? Like, really? That's what you're going to go for? I think it's very funny. Like, it's very clearly, like, a pointed, like...
It's a pointed joke at Jensen Ackles.
Yeah, like, it's for those who know. Like, it's literally like a, if you know, you know.
It's a wink-wink, nudgy sort of thing.
Yeah, but I did think it was, like, very funny that in this episode where, like, the writing was just so questionable that they're like, oh, yeah, this is where we're going to make fun of another show for its writing choices.
Which it is so funny that we literally, neither of us took in who the writer was.
And until you're like, the end.
And you were like... Like, the way they've made Dean feels like Darb Dean.
Yeah.
And you are fucking right.
I'm fucking telling you, man.
Like,
oh,
your God. Spidey senses were tingling.
Okay, I shit you not, I was at work the other day, and a woman walked in wearing the exact Darb-era Cass trench coat. The exact one. I saw it, and I was like, I can't believe I'm seeing this in the wild. It was the exact color. It was the I could not believe it. And I looked around and I was like, fuck, I don't work with anyone who will care about this. And
that's because so I'm assuming upset. Most of your coworkers are at least slightly normal.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I have to have a ban on talking about my special interests at work because I need my coworkers to think I'm at least like a semblance of a well-put-together person.
Like, yeah.
Anyway, that's a complete side note. I have a quick note, and this is for the listeners, not for you, because this is a reference to something that I talked about without you present
in last week's episode. The 6-12 phenomenon.
The 6-12
I got kicked out
phenomenon.
Of and I'm getting kicked out of my own fucking house.
Well, I'm not going to kick you out again. What I am going to say is for those playing along at home, I did notice another instance of the 6-12 phenomenon, which is very exciting. If you go back to the scene where Dean is talking to Sam about not scratching the wall, and, like, he uses the phrase, like, never use the same crapper twice, which,
yeah,
first of all, fucking hilarious. And I also love Sam being like, we always use the same... What are you talking about? Like, I love that he's like, that's such a stupid phrase. But if you look at that scene and you know what I'm talking about, when I say the 6-12 phenomenon, you'll understand what I'm talking about. And I think you should go back and look at it because it is really interesting. And I'm very excited that we've seen it again in not only the next episode after it first occurred, or like at least that I first noticed it, but also with a different director, which makes me feel like it is definitely like an intentional.
It is like Sarah Gamble,
Long Con. This is a point. Now. Yeah.
Is
that appropriately vague? Do you have any idea
what you're talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about. I am going to derail the conversation a little bit, though.
I love it when you do.
What do you think my PSA of the week is this week, Bethany?
My PSA guess of the week. All right. And I don't really know how to phrase it.
Okay. Always a reassurance.
It's the vibe, okay? The vibe is, if you suspect that there is some kind of serial killer or criminal who has been attacking people of a certain demographic, in this case, like young to middle-aged brunette women that Sam has a history with, and you are like, I think this might have to do something to do with like this particular, for like to make it relative to real life, calling card, right? In the episode, it's Spiderweb.
Yeah.
And you are at the home of a person who lives alone and fits the demographic of the people who are being targeted, and you see that calling card, maybe don't just leave. Because the way that Sam had the full flashback, knew it was an arachne, saw the fucking spiderweb, knew that Brenna was somehow involved, and then decided to just leave her house completely unmonitored, with no communication to Dean, and would no you communication to her.
Would you have preferred Sam to do his normal thing of lurking outside random people's houses?
Yeah, honestly, yeah. He'd already broken in. The thing is, they were literally at the front door. He could have just knocked on the door, gone back inside, and then be like, hey, Brenna, just FYI, the suspicious thing that we're going to use to show that you're probably in danger and that I'm going to very obviously look at for a solid, like, 10 seconds, it's right outside your door, and maybe you shouldn't be alone right now.
You're wrong.
Okay.
Unsurprisingly.
Well, I'm right in my assessment of Sam's poor choices, but I'm wrong about
the PSA. To be fair, though, Sam making poor choices is nothing new.
Look, my PSA guess, I suppose, is if you have strong reason to suspect that someone is in danger, don't just fucking leave and not tell them. I think that's really what it comes down to.
Okay. So my PSA this week is if somebody's bit by a spider...
Oh my god, yes.
Maybe don't shoot them.
This is the real reason we have gun laws here.
Like, babe.
Cats out of the bag, guys.
Like, babes, anti-venom exists.
And also, just, like, not all spider bites are deadly.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus, fuck, calm down. Like, it's not.
It's wild to me. He's like, oh, yeah, no, this dude's gonna die anyway because he's been bitten by a spider. I get that it's a supernatural spider, but also, just because you've been bitten by a spider doesn't mean you're gonna die. That's not how it works. That's
also
not
instant fucking tamious.
No.
And I know that, like, Australian venomous animals and things are different to, like, other parts of the world. But, I don't know, man. Like, they're fine. Like, they're just vibing.
Sam really went from 0 to 100. And I get that's the idea of that. I get that's the idea of, like, soulless Sam. But also, like, what gets me about soulless Sam is meant to be, like, the most logical version of Sam. Because Sam is unhindered by, like, morality.
Ethics, yeah.
So he is only there to, like, think about the most efficient way, essentially. The most rational way to get from point A to point B. And then he keeps on making these decisions that are fucking buck wild.
Can we just talk for a second? And, like, actually I maybe want to talk about the Dub effect and Dub and Lachlan, in all fairness, in relation to Sam. Because we often talk about it in relation to Dean because his character is just so consistently...
assassinated?
Well, you know, associated with this, like, womanizing thing, which is just inconsistent kind of with, like, the way that his character is generally portrayed as being, like, sort of just performing, right?
Yeah.
I feel like Sam's characterization is really interesting. And, like, I'm thinking back to, like, After School Special. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, the way that Sam was kind of positioned to be, like, the villain, but actually, like, it's questionable, and, like, the whole use of Sam and, like, morality. And I feel like they're kind of doing a similar thing here where they're trying to, like, make Sam really morally... And, like, to be fair, this is partially the plot. It's not just them as individual writers. But, like, I feel like there's, like, a similar kind of trend of it being, like, is Sam innocent or is Sam guilty in this instance? And I'm like, I have complex feelings about it. And Sam... particularly through this season, we have now a repeated instance of him using people as bait to, like, get at monsters.
The,
like,
Johnification of Sam Winchester.
The Johnification of Sam Winchester is so strong. Like, Soulless Sam and John Winchester are, you cannot convince me otherwise, like, essentially the same fucking character. Because, like, Sam, without his morals and his sort of guilt complex, is just John.
Yeah.
Like, or Sam, when he decides to distance himself from his, like, support networks, mm-hmm. like, when Dean was quote-unquote dead in Mystery Spot, mm-hmm. and he, like, isolated himself from Bobby and everyone else.
Whoopsies, got addicted to demon blood.
Well, not even then, like, because he wasn't, like, not in Mystery Spot. Like, he is just so single-minded and dead-set in his approach. And, like, the way that we can sort of see those patterns, I think for me, reinforces part of how I think John would run jobs. And my reason for that is because of episodes like 118 with the Shriga, where we sort of posited at the time, like, seems like John maybe intentionally left the kids in the field of the child eating Shriga, because that is literally exactly what Sam does this episode.
Yeah.
And also in episodes like when we find out that Joe's dad died because of a hunt with John, like, kind of gives me the same vibes we got, like, in Dead Man's Blood, we have, like, Dean being used as bait, which is, like, totally John's plan, and it, for me, I just think it's really interesting that we show Sam at his least ethical and sort of most dislikable, I guess.
And he's whipping out all the jumbies.
It's literally just John. Like, they're literally like, what aspects of John can Sam emulate that would make the audience be like, ooh, Sam is bad. Yeah. But then, like, they also try to position John as, like, this complicated guy who is just doing his best. And I'm like, you can't use both. Sam without a soul is not a complicated guy just doing his best. No. Sam without a soul is soulless. So, yeah, I just think it's interesting.
Oh, it's a wild episode, though. No matter how you slice it, no matter how you look at it, it's fucking wild that they were like, oh, yeah, this is the decisions that we're making on Sam's behalf. I think it's so interesting, though, that Darb positions Dean as, you know, womanizer. Mm. And then in this episode of Soulless Sam, he positions Soulless Sam as a womanizer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's really interesting that he's kind of positioning Sam at his worst with just base level D, which is an interesting, like, I don't know what that really says, and I don't know if this is Darb playing favorites, but, like, you know, like, it's really interesting that one of the things that
they would use to position Sam as a bad person
is the same thing that they're using to just describe Dean
generally.
Yeah.
That is really interesting. I actually haven't considered it like that before.
And no. I feel like if this was done by separate writers, if, like, one writer had written this, and then, you know, you have the sexualization of Dean Winchester in Dub episode, it's different. But, like, this is Dub very specifically saying one of the things that Sam did while he was soulless was fuck a lot of people. Around.
Which is also, like, feels like slut-shaming.
Come on, let Sam be a slut. It's bloody 2K23. Exactly. Like, come on.
Like, literally.
Sexual liberation is for everyone.
Exactly. Well, it's also just, like, a sense of, for me, right, when they're talking about, like, Sam and his, like, his death dick exploits, right, I understand them being like, oh, it's morally whack for him to have been sleeping with the woman who was married. Like, I get that. And I feel like that is not something that Sam, that we know generally, would do.
Yeah.
But just sleeping with someone on a case just because is definitely something we've seen Sam do. Madison being the first example coming to mind. You know, this is certainly not out of the realm of normal. And I don't think that it makes sense for them to position it as, like, oh, Sam's, like, he's running wild, he's uncontrollable, he's crazy, when it's, like,
he's out here fucking people.
It's like, yeah, that's sometimes adults do that, and it's fine as long as everything is consensual, you know? Like, anyway.
Which, I mean, that lady was asking to be cuffed, so
yeah, like, I don't think she wasn't into it, you know? I think she was there to have a good time, and I was like, good for her, although she is married, so, like, questionable. Who knows? Maybe they're open. She was flirting with him pretty obviously when they were in the bar, so.
Yeah.
What I do want to talk about, again, coming back to characterization of Sam and things that we've talked about before, but can we just appreciate, king of understating, Sam fucking Winchester, I think I might have done some bad stuff. Let's put that right up there with, I saw someone get hurt once.
They say words, and I don't know if they necessarily know what they mean.
I think that Sam is just such a, he has such a funny way of describing things. He's really taken that, like, approach of, it's just not that serious, but, like, it is. It's so serious. And he's like, I think I did something bad. But why does it feel so good?
What's so funny about Sam, though, is he's, yeah, he takes that really, like, oopsie doopsie, something happened approach to like so many things.
Yeah.
That are absolutely unhinged. But then the things that actually like.
The things that he blames himself for are always things where it's like you're really trying to take credit for someone else's work.
Yeah.
Like the whole like apocalypse thing, which like, yeah, okay, Sam like technically was the one who raised Lucifer. But also it was like because he played out the role that Ruby and Lilith put him in and manipulated him into.
It was a group effort. Yeah, and they should be credited for their work.
And literally in this episode I have a note that's like Sam is so desperate to take credit for the work of monsters because he's talking about how like he's, like, done this horrible thing and unleashed this, like, horrible thing. I'm like, no, the monster did that. You actually didn't.
You just didn't stop it.
You just like, didn't stop it. That doesn't mean that you did it. And, like, I understand that it's, like, he's feeling responsible. The same way that Dean talks about how he's, like, I have to save everybody. Like, everyone is my responsibility.
Yeah.
And it's, like, that's impossible as a standard. Like, calm down, babe. Like, it's the same thought process. And I do get that. But I also think it's so funny that Sam seems to have this repetitive thing where he's like, I did this. And it's like, well, actually, if we play the tapes, you
can
did
we get
it.
A live action replay?
Yeah, like we actually have it on video that you didn't do the thing. So
this
I
is literally a fic, isn't it?
Wait, what?
That's literally a fic, isn't it? Just replaying the tapes.
Oh, my work in progress. I think I'm talking about my, like, insane, whack-ass one.
No! The one and only piece of fanfiction you've ever actually published.
I'll put it in the description, but don't expect an update anytime soon. I found a different outlet. I'll give you three guesses what it is. But yes, no, I do think that's interesting. One other note that I wanted to make is that I think it is fascinating that Dean says to Sam, we are not the only hunters on the planet, because Supernatural is so good at tunnel vision.
And they are the only hunters on the planet?
Yeah. It's like, okay, we know that Rufus and Bobby exist, but like...
It's nice for them to be acknowledged, even just for a minute.
We've talked about before, like, basically the only hunters that we've been introduced to are dead.
Yeah.
Like, there are very few exceptions to that. And even, like, Rufus and Bobby, we really only see them in relation to cases Sam and Dean are working.
Yeah.
We very rarely see them doing their own thing. It's almost like they're trying to world build, but it's that they're doing that thing where they're telling you but not showing you.
They're telling you there's a world, but they haven't actually built one.
Yeah. It's like filming an entire show from within a single room and constantly referencing the outside and just never actually showing it.
What it feels like is when you move into a new house and you're like, so my TV is going to be here, my couch is going to be there, my dining table is going to be there, but you've got no furniture in
there. Yeah, it's empty. You're just pretending.
You're just pretending.
You're pointing at things and going, oh yeah, the TV.
Yeah. But there's no actual TV.
And that's literally how it feels when Dean goes, we aren't the only hunters. Look at all these hunters. And I'm like, that is an empty whiteboard with zero names on it. We know very few hunters. The ones we do know have died. And the other ones are either only shown when it's relevant to you or are against you actively.
What I want going is for them to have a case like this, right? And they're like, we're not the only hunters in the world. And then the hunters they get in are fucking Ed and Harry.
Honestly, just because I think. Underutilized.
I just think that would be funny.
Hilarious.
Like,
Bobby's like, these are the only guys I could get on short notice.
Yeah.
I had to send them an email inquiry through their website.
Every other hunter I contacted refused to work with you.
Literally. It's one of those things as well where it's like, the Winchester's reputation outside of like people who actually know them must be insane. And we will get into this, especially in season 7.
My
like, their reputation
has never been worse than.
Literally, okay. The way that I literally believe that Reputation is the Destiel album, like, everyone says it's, like, fucking Evermore. I'm sorry. It's Reputation. Like, I will die on this hill. So many of the songs on my Destiel Taylor Swift playlist are from Rep. The way that that album is about Destiel to me is unhinged, and I will talk about it to infinity, which is why we can't talk now, because this episode will never end. But if anyone wants to talk to me about Supernatural and Taylor Swift, but specifically Rap, oh boy.
The fucking crazy eyes are killing me right now.
The way that, like, the theme of Reputation is going to be actually so interesting coming into season 7, I cannot wait. Because we do get a little bit more of, like, the outside perspective of Sam and Dean.
And, like, the other thing is, like, now they've introduced, like, as much as I don't really like the Campbells, mm-hmm. as much as they've introduced them as other hunters now, it kind of actually does introduce that concept of, like,
a broader world.
They're not the only hunters currently hunting. It does open up the opportunity to, like, other hunters.
And especially, like, the plotline this season where we've got Crowley, who is obviously, like, running his own kind of underground network. We know that he's got the Campbells involved. We know that he now has Sam and Dean involved, you know, albeit they don't want to. But it also sort of opens up, like, okay, well, surely Crowley is not just relying on the Campbells and Winchesters. Like, surely he's put his fingers in the pies.
He's got more baskets than two.
I think it's safe to say that it's interesting. Like, the sandbox has definitely opened this season. Kripke was, like, very
It's just tight. Really sad that the only things that Sarah Gamble managed to dig out of the bloody sandbox was so fucking boring.
It's literally one of those things, and Supernatural is kind of, like, known for this in, like, a meme-y sense all over Tumblr, but it's, like, Supernatural just introduces the most fucking fascinating concepts, and you're like, oh my god, they could do so much with this, I can't wait to see what they do, oh my god, this is phenomenal, what a great setup. And then they, like, look at that, and then they go, actually, I'm kind of interested in this thing over here, and they, like, abandon it completely and go walk in the exact opposite direction and do the most fucking boring thing. And so it's, like, it definitely fits into that category of, like, an example where it's like they really took this opportunity to open up the world of Hunters and of the post-apocalypse, you know, scenario. Like, none of this was supposed to happen kind of thing. It was all supposed to end before now. Theoretically, everything that's happening from this point on is off script. It just kind of doesn't do a lot. We are limited to, oh, the other side of their same family.
Where are the non-related Hunters? Why do all of the Hunters need to be related to them by blood?
To be very, like, fair and, like, transparent, we definitely get introduced to, like, other Hunters and other parts of the community, like, as the seasons go on. But at this point in the series...
It definitely feels like at this point they didn't really even consider that as an option, though.
It is such television.
It's the first time that we've met, really, any other members of the hunting community. And they're like, oh, they just happen to be related to
you. Well, I mean, that's not entirely
true. You know what I mean?
We've definitely met other Hunters, but these are certainly the most recurring. Like, Samuel, I think, has already been in more episodes than either Ellen or Joe ever were.
Yeah.
You know, I think Ellen and Joe had died by this point with the number of episodes that they've been in. And so I think that it's unfortunate that we're being given a lot of screen time. And again, yeah, it feels very narrow in moving along.
Moving right along. This episode, like, everything about it was just, as an episode, it was a bit of a letdown. Like, not gonna lie. The concept was there, and I understand that they kind of had to do this for, like, plot reasons.
The thing about this particular episode and, like, what I think the plot is trying to achieve as part of, like, the overall structure of the season, and you actually mentioned this before we started recording, so I'm going to reiterate a little bit what you said here, and feel free to correct me if you think I'm misquoting you. But essentially, like, even though the quality of individual episodes has kind of feels like it's dropped this season, the overarching, like, structure of the season feels more solid.
It feels more intentional. Everything they're doing feels like it's more intentional in terms of, like, they actually know what they're planning on doing with this season, which is, like, more than you could say about pretty well any other season of this goddamn show. So it's really interesting that in the season where it feels the most cohesive, the most put together, the most intentional, it's really interesting that the actual quality of the episodes is, like, lesser. I think, honestly, you can tie most of the quality issues back to the fact that they introduced the
character. Yeah. And, like, we've talked about this ad nauseum at this point, and if you've been listening along, you know our thoughts on it. If you chose this as your first episode to listen to, well, welcome, but why?
Interesting choice, but okay. Like, we're happy to have you. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Like, it is an interesting choice.
So, the point that I was sort of getting at with that is that I think the narrative purpose of this episode is very important. Yeah. As much as, like, the details of the people they chose to make as victims and the villain and stuff, which is, like, a shocking choice. And I say shocking as in, like, bad, not just, like, it's a genre of horror. Like, it was a bad choice. And I think that as much as, like, the actual quality of the episode, like, with the music and the choice of all the close-ups and, like, whatever, like, I think are questionable at best, the actual narrative purpose of it and the placement of it is really good.
Yeah, like, when you're looking at it from, like, a zoomed out, of course this is where you need to start dealing with the fact that Sam was soulless and he wasn't making good decisions while he was soulless.
Like, we've had, obviously, last episode, Sam got his soul back and we had the warning from Death about putting up the wall and things like that. And then this episode, it's like, well, you were warned not to do this thing. Sam has, you know, we know how Sam hates to be told what he can do. He immediately ignores what he's been instructed to do. He scratches at the wall and then we see the consequence. It makes sense. We get a little bit of background into Sam's life in the year that we didn't see him and Dean didn't see him.
Yeah.
Sam gets to learn the kind of decisions he was making at the time. And as a direct result of that, the audience gets to learn what the consequence is of Sam scratching the wall.
Like, he got another STD.
Don't you love to give Sam STDs?
I don't think they actually canonically give him an STD here, but he does fuck a lot of people.
Remember to use protection, kids. But my point stands, which is that I think that while the episode itself the quality, I think, is poorer than what we know Supernatural is capable of. The actual narrative cohesion and the placement of it within the season as a whole is good.
The concept is really good and fits into the overarching season perfectly. The issue is all of the details for this episode.
Yeah. And it's really frustrating because it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I can see the potential.
I see what you were trying to do. Unfortunately, you didn't do it.
Yeah. And it's really fascinating, especially like looking at the season as a whole. And like I have said before, and I'll say it again, like I think that season 6 and the Gamble era just generally gets quite a bad rap. I have more lenience for it because of reasons I've talked about before. But I also think that the rewatchability of this particular season is higher for reasons like the 6-12 phenomenon. These are details that I'm only noticing for the first time now. And I rewatched the season like fucking probably 4 or 5 times. To be fair, 2 of those times being right now and recently where I rewatched it as we were coming to the end of season 5. And then the first time that I watched it when I was watching the whole show through. So probably like 3 times. Maybe I've seen a few episodes throughout 4 or 5, depending on the episodes. I know I've definitely seen at least one of them about 12. But, you know, this season, structurally, as a narrative, is so cohesive.
Yeah.
And once you have the whole story, you can go back and you can be like, holy shit, I see the foreshadowing, I see the techniques, I see the storytelling in every layer of the show. Not just in the dialogue, but in the settings and in the shot choices and in the lighting. It is so intentional.
Which is really interesting coming out of Kripke era, which was meant to basically be that, but then it kind of falls short because
it feels incidental.
Yeah, it all feels incidental because it was spaced out so much and because how much the overarching plot changed from original conception to what they actually did.
Yeah.
And I think you can also really tell that, I don't know, it just seems like Kripke was less experienced.
Which is valid. I think like, this was like his first
major project.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't know if Gamble had ever been showrunner for anything previously, but to go from writing on a show to showrunning a show after it's already established, you already know what, you know, the budgets are like, you already know what directors you like to use.
With the other creators.
You know, once it's already up and running, I feel like experience doesn't matter as much, which means that you can do kind of what you want to do. Because you've already got 5 years worth of experience of what's possible.
You've got a bit of buffer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas I think you can really tell that Kripke went in not really knowing what he was doing. He had an idea and a plan to execute it and he did what he could. I also just think that it's a hell of a lot harder to plot something over 5 seasons than it is over 1 season. At the end of the day, when you're talking about like short-term plots and plot reveals, it's a hell of a lot easier to be like, okay, well, I've got 20 episodes to tell this story. Like, versus I've got 100 episodes to tell a story.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons why I think Kripke era, at least for me, falls really short compared to what they're starting to do now with the shorter form overarching plots is just the sheer fact that the pacing wasn't there because they had to pivot midway through. They had to introduce angels. Like
they were taking a lot longer to get to the point.
So it was less intentional at the end of the day, like, because they just physically couldn't.
Well, it's almost like it was intentional in the sense of, like, they had to intentionally drop the ball because they couldn't let the plot keep building momentum because they were going to run out of plot before they ran out of episodes that were planned. So, like, they had to kind of keep letting the lull occur, and then that creates, like, a really weird kind of pacing up and down, whereas season 6 feels much more strategically linear, and I don't mind telling you because we've talked about it sort of vaguely before, but like the back end of season 6, it really picks up at like an astronomically insane speed. It's just like it goes from like a 45 degree angle to a 90 degree angle in the space of like an episode, you know, and it doesn't come down until you hit 7.
I did not realize going into making a Supernatural podcast just how distinct the eras are, like just how distinct the different showrunners are.
It's literally like Taylor Swift eras. They're so individual. There are running themes. Like, you can tell them apart.
And I think it's really interesting, the fact that Sarah Gamble seems to have more of a, like, she's doing a lot more plotting and planning than Kripke seemed to be doing. Kripke was like, I know exactly what I want to do. I can see the forest. I'll work out the trees later. Whereas Gamble was like, oh, it's literally all about the fucking trees. I know what the forest should look like, but I'm focusing on individual trees.
I think that it's just a matter of what the audience is privy to. I think with Kripke, it was really interesting because sometimes we, like, as the audience, we'd zoom right out and we'd see the forest, and then they'd zoom us back into a tree. And we'd zoom back out to the forest, and we'd zoom to, like, a fucking acorn, and then we'd zoom to the forest.
Yeah.
Whereas Gamble, like, the audience is so focused on the trees. that when you zoom out and you see the forest, you're going to be like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And you're like, I was in the forest the whole time. How did I not know the forest was here? And it's because you were so busy looking at squirrels. And that's actually a really fun way to make an analogy. And anyone who's listening who's seen the show will know exactly what I'm talking about. And I'm really glad that you used it.
It's an interesting diversion technique to be employing.
Yeah. It's really fun.
And it ties really funnily into the Sarah Gamble long con.
You have no idea.
It's absolutely hilarious how it ties into the Sarah Gamble long con. You know what I mean?
We have an episode coming up which is just so Sarah Gamble long con relevant, and I cannot wait. It's so excellent how perfectly that has lined up, because let me tell you, I didn't expect it. But I rewatched that episode and I thought to myself, well, this will be fun. Anywho, I think we should maybe tie back to this particular tree of an episode rather than talking about the forest that is season six. I want to quickly point out just like an Australianism. The way that husband or whatever judged his wife for drinking like a third of a glass of wine, if I'm being generous. She had like two sips.
I'm Australian, and so I know that our slang is not universal. But the way that I was expecting her to call it a goon sack and a bag of wine was unreal. I was like, oh, it's a goon bag. Like, it's a goon sack.
She makes a good point when she's just like, the box stuff doesn't get better with age, which I think is actually a really fun line. And like, I don't even drink just generally, but I just think it is so funny when I see American media, because the difference in culture when it comes to like what is viewed as alcoholism, insane. The little sip of wine she had isn't even a third of what I would use if I was cooking dinner.
The key thing is, it's a goon sack. It's boxed wine. It's never good.
There's like, a reason why it's what we attach to a clothesline and spit in a circle. Like,
yeah, no, for
we're not doing that with like a nice Shiraz.
No. To be clear, this is not to say that all boxed wine is bad. All bottled wine is good.
No.
Not the case even.
In generalisation. Right?
Like, but in generalisation, if you're a drinking goon, it's normally not because you're a wine fan. Like, it's not normally because you appreciate the taste of wine. It's normally because you're out and you want to get fucked up and you can only afford a $10 goon sack.
I literally got almost an exact version of the, like, goon she's using. Like, it's just in my pantry. It is my cooking wine. I bought it to cook with, and we do nothing else with it. Like, it's never chilled. It just sits in its fucking sack because why would we...
Sorry. Something wild about being like, it just sits in a sack.
Does, you know?
Like, you're not, I want to make clear, you're not wrong. It does just sit in a sack. But like,
what a weird way to think about
it. It's just a weird way to think about it. As like, sitting in a sack.
Speaking of other things that are wild, I just want to make a point of like, maybe what is the worst dialogue we've come across in Supernatural for a hot minute. And that is when Sam gets off the phone with Brenna, which, first of all, insane choice for Roy as, like, the spider monster, the Arachne, I think, to let her answer the phone when she's essentially in, like, a hostage situation. The fact that he allowed her to answer the phone and, like, talk to Sam seems
wild. That's how
you
can tell it's a loving and balanced relationship.
Well, to be fair, he didn't really intend her any harm.
If I was a giant spider monster, would you still love me?
So, she's on the phone, right? Like, and this is something that I think is just ridiculous, but they're clearly trying to get Sam to come back to the house because the whole thing's a trap for Sam. Yeah, whatever. So Sam's called Brenna to check in on her. And she's like, oh, can you swing by? And he goes, she said it's no big deal, but I can tell she's in deep trouble. And I was like, how, Sam? Is it your spidey fucking sense? And then literally, like, less than 90 seconds later, Dean's like, my spidey sense is tingling. And I was like, oh, God, I hate this. But like,
do you ever just feel seen?
It hits. But yeah, it's insane to me that they just had Sam have a line that was like, she said it's no big deal, but I can tell she's in deep trouble. It's like, couldn't you have just said, we need to go there now?
Or, she sounded kind of weird, let's go check in.
Yeah, or just, that's weird, we should check on her. Or, at any point, mention to Dean that you saw the giant fucking spiderwebs at her house, now that you've told him that the monster is an Arachne. Like, I just think that Sam communicating would solve a lot of problems on Sam as well. Is that at the end of the episode, he, like, tries to apologize to Brenna, right? And he's like, Brenna, and she stops, and he says, look, I'm so sorry. Which, okay. But she, like, closes her eyes, she opens it again, she doesn't say anything, she doesn't look at him, and she just walks inside her house. And then he tries to, like, stop her. He tries to be like, Brenna, I... And it's just like, Sam, Think about the context of what's just happened. It does not matter how sorry you are or how much you try and apologize. She doesn't actually have to forgive you. She doesn't owe you her forgiveness. Because at the end of the day, you got her husband killed. Mm-hmm. And you did it relatively intentionally. And then it comes back to, like, was it Sam? Was it not Sam? And, like, we can argue around in circles. But from Brenna's perspective, at least, because she doesn't understand the full scope of things.
It's a little like having an evil twin for Sam, isn't it?
Kinda. For her, from her perspective, all she knows is...
this dude got her husband killed.
Got involved with this guy and then was theoretically dead or at least missing for a year. Comes back, is a monster, and then she has to watch him be beheaded in front of her. Like, there is no ifs, ands, or buts about this. This woman does not have to forgive Sam. She does not have to give him the time of day. And she doesn't. And I think that while it makes sense that Sam is, like, trying to apologize and trying to, like, whatever, I don't know what he was expecting. Like, I don't think that she has any reason to turn around and be like, it's okay, Sam. Shit happens. Like, what? No.
Because Sam fucked some shit up.
And I actually quite like that as a decision. I like that they had her just not acknowledge him and walk into the house. I think that that makes actually the most sense of any reaction she could have had. I think, because, like, what do you fucking say to that? What do you fucking say to that?
How do you fucking respond to, oh yeah, I got your husband killed, but it's fucking fine?
Again, Sam, king of understatement. I think it's an interesting choice of Sam to try and call out to her again after she's walking away and not just accept that she's not going to respond.
But it's okay because internally he's burning in hell.
That's what we call karma. I do think it's interesting.
Taylor Swift karma acceptance.
I'm telling you, it's always fucking relevant. Anyway, I think I'm just about wrapped up. I've got like two more notes. Do you have anything else that you wanted to touch on?
Not really. Like, this episode was just kind of whack.
We've,
like,
pretty well established that at this point.
Obviously, Supernatural as a whole is always kind of whack. But this was just whack in a different way to what it's normally whack. Normally, it's like, oh, okay, they've just made some interesting decisions that didn't really pan out. In, like, one area. This area was like, oh, yeah, the sound design's going to be whack. The shot choices in this episode, just, like, the fucking close-ups constantly, fucking whack.
Yeah. Although, I suppose you could say, like, in, like, obviously, like, the flashbacks, there were an insane number of close-ups, and like throughout the rest of the episode, like, the close-ups were often on either side of the flashbacks. I think you could suggest that, like, artistically it meant that, like, they were trying to pull your attention towards, like, when the shots were versus weren't in that close. I don't think it was aesthetically
they also appealing. Made them black and white. I understand if they're using it as, like, a storytelling device to, like, very clearly indicate, like,
the time period,
this is very much then versus now. But, like, I also just think it's fucking wild because they also made them black and white. Like, they already had a storytelling device they were using to make it, like, then versus now. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, yeah, what if we also just make it black and white for shoots and games?
It feels like spoon feeding. It feels like they're like, we don't trust the audience to understand that if Samuel is around and Sam's making insane decisions and Dean's not there, that it's the past. We also have to make it black and white, and we also have to intercut it with, like, insane close-ups.
And add some symbols.
Do you know what it is? It's the Supernatural equivalent of, like, the Vine boom noise. You know where they person, like, turns their head and it's like boom and it, like, zooms on them? It's literally that. Like, every reveal is, like, Vine boomified.
That's how you know it's quality media, yeah? It doesn't stop it from being an insane choice, though.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. I have two very quick points that I want to make. Number one is I really felt seen in this week's episode, which is something I didn't think I'd be able to say.
Yeah.
But the moment when Dean is like, oh, what, so we're going to drop everything and run to this case because of some weird coordinates? And Sam is like, 2 minutes ago you weren't even doing anything. I was like, Dean is me. Dean is me when I'm scrolling TikTok and I have been for 3 hours and I'm just absolutely having a veg out day and then someone tries to call me to ask me to do something and I'm like, oh, I have so much to do. And I was like, you were literally just on TikTok. You were doing nothing.
But also, literally, this is the entire plot of 102 Wendigo. Mysterious coordinates, dropping everything to run and see what they are.
Like, I am telling you, season one called and it wants its plot back.
Okay, I did realize that I did miss a few of my notes.
Okay.
We get the name Crazy Eyes McGee.
Oh my god, just like Fuckface McGee.
Which reminds me of Fuckface McGee.
Wow, we're really expanding on the McGee family.
Yeah, the McGee family is getting some
good season one callback for us, not for them. Fuckface McGee, he was like early on, right?
Yeah, I think it was either one or two. Who was Fuckface McGee?
Was Fuckface McGee the one, was he the dad in the episode where the family is like, they're hunting people for sport?
No.
No?
No. It's the one where they're in the wolves. Fuckface McGee is the evil dude who fucking raped his daughter and then forced her to live in
China. And the grandpa. Okay.
Also, I don't know, but
Family Matters?
Family Matters. But
let me find out.
But Fuckface McGee was a me addition.
Yes, that was actually a Jamie callback.
That was a Jamie callback. That was a...
Who's the psychic Jamie? Oh, wait, no. Family Matters was season 6, episode 7. We don't know what we're talking about.
No, it's not Family Matters. It's,
What the fuck is it? I'm just going to Google Supernatural episode in the walls.
It is...
Girl in the
It is something, something,
Family Remains.
Family Remains.
Family Remains.
This show really does like to be like, oh, we're about family. That's really their one shtick. That is a very specific to us callback, which is fucking hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
At the start of the episode, we get the, obviously, the flashback where they're getting pulled over by the cops and Samuel's driving. Does he have a license?
I want to talk about this, actually. Okay. It's so funny to me. Because if he does, right, say that he, when he got resurrected with his wallet, right? Yeah. If he had a license, it would theoretically have his actual birth date on it. Which means, like, he would be the perfect candidate for one of those ads where they're like, doctors hate him because of, like, how good his skin looks for his age. Dermatologists hate this hack. Like, do you know what I mean? I think in the episode he says that he's, like, 89 or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe one of the flashbacks.
I think 89 in the flashback. So he must be, like, 90. Now. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I do think it would be really funny if he pulled out his license and the cop was just like, damn, you look good for your age.
But yeah, no, so does he have a license? Like, is that technically illegal? Should that have been my PSA this week?
I think it would be really funny if Samuel pulled out his legitimate ID and then got accused of identity fraud because of the birthday. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
How fucking funny would
that
be?
The one time that they're not actually committing identity fraud.
Yeah, the one time it's
legit. is the one time that he actually, like...
gets caught out.
Yeah.
That would be so fucking funny.
It's really interesting because it seems like Samuel, like, the more we see about him, the more it seems like he doesn't maybe, like, obviously he goes by a fake name and he's pretending to be FBI.
Yeah.
But he doesn't seem to go by, like, many aliases, unlike sort of Sam and Dean and the way they operate.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I think the way that the Campbells hunt is different to the way the Winchesters hunt in the sense of, like, the Campbells don't really, at least in the way that we're, like, shown, they don't really keep in touch with previous people.
Yeah.
Like, Sam and Dean will often be like, give us a call if anything ever happens, or, like, we have episodes where they
based on funny when you think ones. About the literal quote, this, we don't shoot the same tool twice.
Yeah.
We literally. Never go back because, you know, hunters leave a mess.
And it's like, yeah, that's actually kind of the point sometimes. But I don't think that the Campbells really hunt in the same way. And I think part of that is because of the era he was originally hunting in. They didn't have mobiles. They weren't giving out their number. And if they were, they were giving out a landline. One thing, though, that I did want to also point out, which is, again, like, kind of a throwback, is that, like, why are they always getting photographed at hospitality establishments for people who've won awards for plot reasons? Like, because when they get photographed at Biggerson's in Bad Day at Black Rock, and it gets plastered everywhere, and that's how, like, they get found. And then in this episode, like, Sam just gets photographed is in the background of, like, that guy winning the competition. I just think it's funny that, like, it's one of those things where it's like, if I had a nickel for every time this happens, I'd have two nickels, which isn't a lot, but it is weird that it happened twice. Like, it's literally that.
They're really just out here making these decisions, and it is truly weird.
One other thing that I do very, very quickly want to touch on, and it is irrelevant to everything, and it's only because I think it's a really funny acting choice that Jared made, and I just love it, is when he tries to go back to the police station and he gets arrested, which is, like, fair and valid, honestly. When the cop is, like, starting to detain him and he's, like, grabbing him, Sam does this little, like, finger waggle thing where he's like, no, 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 there's been a misunderstanding. And it's so funny. He's, like, literally, like, wagging his finger at this police officer. And it's just the funniest thing to me. I'm like, what an interesting decision that you've just made. You're being actively arrested and you're like, I'll just waggle my finger at him like he's a naughty boy. What? It's just really funny to me, personally.
Look, I don't think I have anything else to add on this one.
That how was my last note.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling like it was an episode of Supernatural, and we've talked about it.
Some episodes of Supernatural just feel more like an episode of Supernatural. And this seems like peak bad Supernatural, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, there are certain hallmarks of an episode of Supernatural that make it an episode of Supernatural, and this one just had a lot of bad ones, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, this had the poor lighting choices, this had the poor sound design, this had the poor choice in representation of both women and people of colour. It, I'm sure, was offensive in ways that we missed. It's just, it's a whole thing. They be making choices.
They be making choices. I like to think that I have some faith in Sarah Gamble, but like, what are you doing letting them do this to you, babe?
Look, we've all been involved in team projects where we've been let down by other members of the team. Anyway, I think that it is time to wrap up. Do you have any final thoughts, or are you ready to move on? I am all
done for the day.
Okay. So, Jamie, how would you rate episode 13, season 6, Unforgiven, out of 5?
I think I'm going to give it 2 stars.
I think all of our reasons as to why you would rate that and why I would think it is fair is pretty much covered in the last hour and a half of discussion.
Every single thing that Supernatural does bad, it does. I've been pretty forgiving. Like, I've gotten used to it, you know? I've developed a certain sense of fondness for this trash pile that my friends seem to like.
It's one of those things where it's like, normally we could just big yikes, acknowledge that it's poor and move along, because it's like if every single episode we devoted to talking about how and why it's bad, we would just never talk about anything else.
And so I think I've developed a certain amount of immunity. You know, I've been vaccinated against this bullshit. Normally I can be like, okay, I can see that it's Supernatural. That's fine. I won't penalize it for being Supernatural.
Yeah. Like at a certain point you have to be like, well, I can't be mad at it for being what it says on the tin.
Yeah. But this one definitely just felt more like all of the bad things about Supernatural than any episode, like, at least that I can think of in the last, like, 2.5 seasons.
The next episode is titled Mannequin 3, The Reckoning. Do you have any thoughts, feelings, hopes, dreams, or predictions?
So I'm going to just predict that it's a haunting on, like I'm thinking, like, Hollywood Babylon, but, like, season 6.
Oh, so along the lines of season 1 coordinate once it's plot back. Yeah. Going into season 2 coordinate once it's plot back.
Yeah. we're doing Hollywood Babylon again, but this time better, maybe.
I don't know, Hollywood Babylon was a pretty, like, as far as early season episodes.
It's a pretty good one. I remember that episode actually pretty fondly. Either there's a haunting that's weirdly similar to, like, a horror movie, or...
It's
like a ghost faces situation, or like there's a haunting on set, or like something like that, you know?
Do we think that Cass is going to be in next week's episode?
No, it doesn't sound like the sort of title where Cass would be there, and we know how Sarah Gamble feels about Cass. So I think, unfortunately, we're not going to see Misha Collins guest star next week.
Okay, no worries. That brings us to the end of today's episode. Hopefully you had as much fun listening as we have had recording. And hopefully we have you back next week. If you wanted to get in touch with us outside of listening to us ramble on your ears for an hour or so every week, you can always hit us up on any of our social medias. All of the links will be in the description below. And some possible topics for conversation could include...
How do you feel about the close-ups and lighting choices and sound design of the flashbacks this week?
Yeah, actually, a valid question. If you have watched this episode recently, or if you want to go ahead and rewatch it after listening to us talk about it, do you agree? Because it is subjective at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Our opinions are no more or less valid than anyone else's. So I would be interested to
Except for the fact that I'm always right.
It's literally the thing with just a thing of, like, the narrative supports your opinion.
Unfortunately,
like, psychic Jamie is literally just the plot of Dean.
Unfortunately, my opinions are normally supported by the fucking plot. Like, it's becoming a real issue.
The narrative supports my opinions derogatory.
Like, which is fucking hilarious, considering, like,
but no, I think, honestly, I don't think we even have to give any other examples of things you could come to talk to us about. We've dragged this episode pretty hard. If you have any, like, different opinions, or you want to...
Do you want to defend it? Like,
yeah, like, come let us know. I'd be interested in having a discussion. Because, yeah, like, at the end of the day, it is art, and art is subjective. So if you loved all the close-ups, hit us up. Tell us you loved them. If you liked the use of the black and white, hit us up. Tell us you liked it. One of the best parts of engaging in fandom is getting... alternative, like, opinions and stuff. I know a lot of people listen to us because they just like getting different opinions on things, even if they don't agree with us.
Unfortunately, people like hearing me roast stuff, which is a weird decision on your behalf.
Oh, I actually think that it's really on brand for a Supernatural fandom, if I'm being totally real with you. Half of the joy of being a Supernatural fandom is just bullying Supernatural.
I never bully Supernatural. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, you just bully me about it. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, and hopefully we have you back next week. Bye!